Next on BYUSN, 6 games to go for BYU men's basketball. So, what's a fair record to expect for the Cougars as they close in on March? And speaking of the madness, does BYU have a better chance of being a 6th seed or better in the Big 12 tournament? Or the actual NCAA tournament? We'll discuss.
BYU basketball radio analyst Mark Durant joins the program. Is it fair to ask more of A.J. DeBonsa and Rob Wright with Richie Saunders out for the season? And Riley Chamberlain and Jane Hedengren of BYU Track and Field join us in studio to recap their record-breaking race from the weekend.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy Tuesday, February 17th. I am Spencer Linton alongside your lunar calendar expert, Jason Shepard.
Yes, today is the Lunar New Year, which I found out this morning. Is that the same as the Chinese New Year, or is that two different things?
It's the same
thing. It's the same thing. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, all right, good.
Similar, close enough.
We are entering the year of the horse, apparently.
Oh.
Can you imagine, though, the miles we would have gotten out of this throughout the year if it had been the year of the bear?
Why couldn't it be the year of the bear?
But no, it is the year of the horse, which reminds me that I've never been on a horse in my life. And quite frankly, I'm a little apprehensive about even getting on a horse.
So you still don't want to get on a horse?
I don't really want to get on to something that completely takes away my ability to control the situation.
You're not a horse whisperer?
I am not a horse whisperer. But yeah, have you been on a horse before?
Truth be told, no.
Just two non-horse people here.
I have never ridden a horse. However, the invitation from Tyler Batty's family, who own a horse ranch,
yes, they do,
has been extended to all of us, Jason. So if, and I propose, if we both decide to do this at some point, we need to hook up with Tyler Batty's clan, and we need to do this together, and it needs to be documented.
Okay, you want to know something really weird? I've never been on a horse, but I've been on a camel.
And you're afraid of a horse?
It was at the Phoenix Zoo. I don't know. But yeah, so I've been on a camel,
so much to
but
unpack
not
here.
A horse.
You've been on a camel, but not a horse, and you did it at the Phoenix Zoo.
At the Phoenix Zoo, because when you go to the zoo, instead of going to Salt Lake, you go down to Phoenix.
Happy Lunar New Year, everyone.
It's the year of the horse.
What an incredible way to start this show. And to my friends in Korea, Medis Hollar. That's what it's called in Korea.
Very nice.
There you go. All rise and shout. It's time for What's Trending.
BYU has some real firepower, but without Richie, it's going to be difficult. That's where my expectation is now. Get to a Sweet 16 and let's see what happens.
You have to adapt. Just get through these next few games. You get in the NCAA tournament, and then you freaking let AJ lose.
Yeehaw! What's Trending, presented by Tim Daly Nissan, part of the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968. March is basically upon us. We are, what, 12 days away from March basketball? The regular season entering that critical final stretch for BYU men's and women's basketball. As for the men, they have 6 games to go in what ESPN's Basketball Power Index has dubbed the 8th toughest schedule remaining in all of college basketball. There are over 360 teams in Division I college basketball, and BYU has the 8th toughest remaining strength schedule. And they're going to do it without Richie Saunders. So with that injury in mind and the gauntlet ahead, Jason, what's a fair record to expect for BYU over the final 6 games?
I still believe that this team can go 500, that they can go 3-3 over the final 6. Because remember, last week we were talking about the opportunity, you know, to go 5-2 over the final 7. And BYU got the 1. And now you look at it without Richie. And I think, look, and it's not easy. You just described exactly what's ahead of BYU. You start this week at Arizona, a team that's coming off 2 straight losses. They dropped from 1-4 in the latest polls. So you know they're going to be refocused. Now, they may be without Koa Pete and one other, so there's a chance they may be down some players. Maybe that's something that can even the playing field. But I still believe that this team can go 3-3. The interesting part about this conversation for me, Spencer, is that For me, what the record is, and I understand seeding is important. I don't want to make it sound like it doesn't matter, because we know it does. But to me, the results of these games and any seeding positively or negatively that's affected by whatever record BYU has, to me, that's secondary right now to just using these final six games to figure out how this team will work without Richie. If you can use these six games, but say instead of going 3-3, you go 2-4, if you can figure it out, though, and feel like you've got a really good grasp on how the rotations will work and who's going to step up in these moments over the final six games, heading into Kansas City and then ultimately into the NCAA tournament, to me, that's more important ultimately than what the final record is.
In the spirit of the Year of the Horse, and because BYU's hopes after the Richie Saunders injury are a little bit downtrodden, can BYU channel their inner Seabiscuit, Jason?
Oh.
Pull them out of the great, it was out of the Great Depression in real life. This is a different type of depression for BYU basketball fans, but can the Cougs get on the Seabiscuit track and do something unthinkable, which would be, in my opinion, go 4-2 in the back six? Because here's the reality. Based on where BYU sits in the current Big 12 standings, which is 7-5, tied for sixth, even if BYU does go 4-2 in the back six, they are still probably finishing in sixth place.
Right.
Isn't that wild?
They may be where they are anyway.
And I should also point out, the win percentages that we just showed you from Ken Pomeroy do not, in fact, take into account the injury and production of Richie Saunders. It's just the games that you've played, what you've done, all your analytics, and then those percentages are calculated out. So how do those percentages change, considering that BYU will not have one of their big three? And oh man, what a loss it is. I know you and Jerem talked about it at length yesterday, but let's double down on that. It feels like, to me, BYU's percentages of winning a game probably drop 10 to 15% each game on those Ken Pomeroy odds because you don't have Richie Saunders in the game. So if you're a 14% chance to win at Arizona, in my opinion, it goes down to about 5%.
Right.
He's that important. But can the Cougars do something to beat the odds and go 4-2? But still wild that even if they do, you're still finishing probably sixth because you don't hold tiebreakers against basically anybody above you.
See, that's why to me the record, again, it sounds weird to say that your record and where you're seated, both in the conference tournament and in the NCAA tournament, that it doesn't matter. I understand that it sounds weird to say that. But because of the situation and to what you were just saying, there's a real chance that you may end up being a six seed, whether you go 3-3 or 4-2 or whatever.
It's probably the same.
It's probably going to end up being the same. So for me, the priority, if you can get through these six games and feel really good about where the team is at. That's why I said yesterday on the show, you know, if there is a silver lining, you do have a couple of weeks to play six games to try and see what works and what doesn't. So maybe you can work through a couple of these things. And let's not forget, BYU had the luxury of having three elite players. You talk to any team before a season starts, and if you're going to have, you know, one player that's, you know, potential player of the year and is a top two pick, and then you add a guy like Rob Wright a player that's putting up the numbers, you have two of those guys, you're going to feel like your chances of making a deep run in the NCAA tournament are going to be big. It's only because BYU had three of those guys and now one's taken away that it's a bit of a, you know, you get a little shell-shocked. So there's still, everything is still there for BYU. I just think these next six games are more about figuring out what life post-Richie looks like before heading into the postseason.
This post from our guy Evan Miyakawa, who joined the show recently, he said, Richie Saunders' devastating season-ending injury will drop BYU from 22nd to 45th nationally at evanmia.com. So that's his overall ranking of teams. That's how important Richie Saunders is, and that then turns the light to what you were just talking about, Jason. And we'll talk more about this in just a moment. The importance of AJ and Rob and what you can fairly hope for and expect them to do compared to what they're already doing, which is insane. Our question of the day, what is a fair record to expect for BYU basketball in the final six games? Our friend at for three, JT, Jonathan Tavernari chimes in. Jason, what does he have for us?
He's got 3-3 in the final six. He says 22-9 overall, 10-8 in the Big 12, and then two wins in the Big 12 tournament, six seed and Sweet 16 bound. That's what he still believes.
Okay, Sweet 16.
Yes, Ella, I still think Sweet 16 is possible.
That would be a massive win, in my opinion. If BYU, given everything that has gone down, could get back to another Sweet 16, they're beating the odds right now.
Well, that's but I think that goes back to what I was just saying. You still have AJ and Rob. And look, hopefully what we saw from the non-AJ and Rob guys in the Colorado win, hopefully that becomes more consistent moving forward, because quite frankly, BYU needs that. They really do.
Weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram, and I'll add this. It feels like there's really no like middle ground for BYU here with the final six. It feels like it's going to be this incredibly strong galvanizing moment and the team rises to the occasion, or they kind of fall off of a cliff. And a number of my friends have reached out to me with a similar sentiment after the game on Saturday. I'm hoping that it can be like a middle ground at worst, 3-3, but it kind of feels like it's one or the other, Jason. It's like a polarizing thing with BYU and what they're capable of here.
And then they can ride into the postseason on their stallion in the year of the horse. All right, you teased this a second ago.
Yes.
With Richie Saunders' injury in mind, is it fair to ask more of AJ and Rob?
Well, whether it's fair or not, I feel like you have to. I talked to our good friend Jimmer Fredette about this. If you will humor me, BYU fans, remember when, and I know that there's some pain associated with this, in 2011, BYU lost one of their big three for a different reason. When Brandon Davies couldn't play anymore, what did BYU and Jimmer Fredette do? Well, they dropped the next game. It was ugly at home against New Mexico, but then they figured some things out, which is what you were talking about, Jason. And to me, the Colorado game was the ugly game right after the injury because it happened in the first minute of the game, right? So can BYU figure some things out? I'm sure they've been trying to do that over the past few days with AJ and Rob, and then look to somebody else. For me, the guy that has to step up, that has the most opportunity to take more shots, to be more of an integral part of this team, to take the void of that empty spot in the big three, it's clearly Kennard Davis. Can Moo Davis get going and join AJ and Rob? Now, AJ and Rob are going to have to probably score a little bit more. Jimmer said to Dave Rose, hey, how many points did Brandon average? Dave's like, 14 or 15. He's like, well, I'll take care of the points. How many rebounds did he average? Dave told him the number. He said, okay, you get the guys to handle those rebounds. I'll take care of the points, and we're good to go. Now, ultimately, it ended up with BYU being close in the Sweet 16 and losing, but I think this team is capable of doing that. AJ and Rob can do a little bit more. Opportunity knocks for Moo Davis, and why not? Why not have this be a galvanizing moment when the opportunity is huge for the other guys to try and do something?
Yeah, I agree with you, whether it's fair or not. I think both of these guys will willingly put more on their shoulders because that's the type of, number one, leaders that they are, but also, number two, it's the type of players that they are. And as we've seen, look at what Rob has done. We're talking back-to-back 30-plus, back-to-back career games for Rob Wright. And beyond any of that, his ability to shoot so efficiently, that just continues to get better and better. So whether they're being asked to put more on their shoulders, both of them will, because they know that they're capable of doing
it. By necessity.
Yes. And I agree with you as well that, you know, Kennard Davis could be a huge piece to this puzzle if he can start figuring things out on a more consistent basis. But one guy probably isn't going to make up for what Richie gave you. And I love the, you know, what you were talking about. Jimmer's like, okay, how many points? All right, what's the rebound? Okay, we can get, you know, maybe three or four here, three or four. I think that's what you're looking at. It's going to be a team effort to try and get all of those different things that Richie did and sort of get it. You get a couple rebounds here, get maybe a couple of steals here, a couple hustle plays here.
Yes.
That's how you make up for the loss of Richie Saunders.
Okay, just to kind of bare bones this thing, if Richie Saunders is averaging, and again, these are approximate numbers, just for the simple math on the air, 20 points a game, how much can Rob and AJ make up for in that regard? And then how much do you rely on Mu Davis and then your three-point shooters off the bench and Kaba Keita and Beto Ahmed?
Don't you think that AJ and Rob can make up, if you're using your number of 20, don't you think they can realistically make up half of that, just those two?
8 to 10 points?
Yeah.
Which is crazy, so because AJ's averaging 26 a game in Big 12 and Rob is 21 and a half.
I know, it sounds weird, but these guys are capable of doing that.
They could make up 8 to 10, the bench and Mu Davis.
Eight, then you're talking about another 10 points.
That's what it's going to take.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to take. All right, BYU is currently, as we mentioned, tied for 6th in the Big 12 standings. Joe Lunardi has the Cougars as a 6th seed in this morning's bracketology update. So projected 6th seed in the Big 12 tournament, same for the NCAA tournament. Question is, Jason, does BYU have a better chance of being a 6th seed or better in the Big 12 tourney or better in the NCAA tournament?
There's a chance that they may be a lower, higher, lower seed.
Better, worse.
Better, yeah.
That's kind of what I default to.
Yeah. Like there's right now, there's people picking BYU to be the 7th seed in Kansas City and then a 6th seed in the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, I think it's very, very possible that you could have BYU being a lower seed in the conference tournament and then getting a higher seed heading into the NCAA tournament.
So for BYU to do better than 6th place in the Big 12, and we've already talked a little bit about this, they would need Iowa State, Kansas, and Texas Tech to lose 3 of their remaining 6 games, and BYU would have to win the remaining 6.
Sure, that sounds great. Let's have that happen. How about we do that?
Even if BYU goes 5-1, the unthinkable, right, 5-1, amazing run, they still need a ton of help up above to get to a better seed. It feels like BYU is locked into the 6, maybe the 7. So
look who BYU has in front of
yes,
them.
Yes, but if you, let's say BYU catches Iowa State after a big win hangover. I mean, they beat Houston last night. They're feeling good. They just ran Kansas out of their own gym again. You beat Kansas and Houston at home in Ames. They come to Provo. BYU's in a weird place, but let's say BYU makes 12 three-pointers.
Right.
Like, and the Marriott Center's going nuts, and Iowa State's like, oh, no, it's happening again, just like it did against TCU. Iowa State's looked weird on the road at times. It's hard to win on the road in this conference. Say BYU wins that game and then gets on a little bit of a heater. If you go 4-2, like, is there a chance that BYU could be a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament?
It's absolutely possible.
If you're listed as a 6 right now, but in your back 6 you beat Texas Tech, and then in the Big 12 tournament you win another big game, now you got a little bit of momentum, and it's like, huh, well, maybe BYU can jump up to the 5 seed. That opportunity is still out there. In the Big 12 standings, it almost feels impossible that BYU can do better than finishing in 6th place, because the conference has 4 teams ranked in the top 8, 5 in the top 13, and the top 5 all only have 2 or 3 conference losses, and BYU is already 2 games back. So that's what we're talking about. BYU would have to go 5-1, and then the teams with 3 losses would have to go 3-3. Yeah, it could happen, but the chances feel pretty minuscule right now. So I'll take the NCAA tournament better seed than the Big 12 tournament at this point.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, that's the one. If you're gonna have a higher seed in one, that's the one you're going to choose every day of the week.
Let's go.
Except Sunday, of course.
Come on.
All right.
Come on.
Tonight, BYU women's basketball will look to get back in the win column against the Cincinnati Bearcats. Coverage begins at 9 Eastern on ESPN Plus with that guy, and on BYU Radio with this guy.
After the break, a guy I'm guessing has absolutely ridden a horse into the sunset. BYU basketball radio analyst Mark Duran is on the show. Can he legitimately ask AJ and Rob to do more? Because I guess we are. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968.
Really just coach been talking about going through adversity, so we just faced some adversity. Our best player, one of our best players out today, so we just had to finish strong for him.
Now, Rob's a guy that can, like I said, space the floor, so we needed some of that.
You got to take care of what's in front of you.
And there's just something to be said about finding a way to win games.
True that. The words of BYU head coach Kevin Young. We are live in Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU sports play-by-play. I am Spencer Linton. He is a man who has ridden a camel, Jason Shepherd. Joining us now, BYU basketball radio analyst. He's the third of our Three Amigos clan here today. Mark Durant is back on the show. Mark, how you feeling this morning?
I feel great. I mean, regardless of what happens, we are all incredibly blessed, and it's fun and exciting, and I get to talk to my two favorite people, Jerem's not my favorite person, Jason and Spencer. Jerem is way down on the list, let's be honest, but yeah, you guys are so great to be on.
Mark, good vibes all around. In the words of the great Steve Martin from that movie Three Amigos, we all have an El Guapo in our life, and it feels like BYU's El Guapo right now is the injury bug. So how in the world did the Cougars band together and overcome, let's face it, a devastating injury to an all-timer at BYU and Richie Saunders?
Yeah, I can't remember a more devastating injury and loss for me on a personal level. I've gotten to know Richie over the years and his wonderful family, his parents, his wife, and I don't know how to deal with that on a personal level. I'm just so heartbroken for them. I mean, I know everyone knows that, who knows Richie knows he'll be just fine, but that doesn't make this moment any easier, and certainly it has some real consequences to the basketball team and their futures, and we'll talk about that, but I just love Richie Saunders as a person and as a friend, and I'm just heartbroken for him. He's had great moments here at BYU, but I just felt like this next month or two would hold some of the greatest moments for him. That's what's really hard about it, is because I just can imagine what Richie would have done in these next couple months, and that's hard to come to grips with, but hey, that's where we are, and that's what happens in sports, and like you've been talking about, it's now incumbent upon other guys to find a way to still improve and achieve your goals and take advantage of opportunities and just be better. And they'll need to be better because Richie's as great as I've ever seen at BYU, and to fill that hole is going to be a significant challenge.
And Mark, Saturday had to be such a strange situation because of the very high highs and the very low lows. Everybody's excited for the game and the jersey retirement, and then you have the injury as soon as the game tips off, and then halftime comes and everybody's excited to you know, honor Jimmer, and you see the jersey, and then, you know, sort of reality sets back in the second half, but then you're feeling good because BYU won. What a roller coaster Saturday must have been.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so glad that the team has found a way to come out with a win there, because it was a special day for Jimmer. And we talk about Jimmer in the same way we talk about Richie. We just absolutely love and adore Jimmer and all that he's done and in his career at BYU. So that was really special. But yeah, having that whole game, just thinking in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, is Richie okay? And it wasn't as bad that day because in the back of your mind, you still had hope, right? That, you know, the thumbs up walking off the floor on his own feet. Maybe it was just a strain, or he just got knocked or something. And so there was hope that it wasn't the end for Richie at that point. So it was an enjoyable day. Great to come out of there with a win, which was desperately needed. You talk about everything else. I mean, that win was so critical to anything BYU wants to go do in the future, and with or without Richie, they needed that game. And so they found a way to get that done, and to honor Jimmer, what a day. I mean, that whole deal, BYU, say what you want about BYU, but they know what they're doing, man.
Yes.
When they put together something like that, it is going to be special and memorable. And just the whole experience at BYU is such a high level that, you know, the half times, the cheer, everything they do, it's like you get your money's worth. I know ticket prices are going up, but I've been a lot of places, a lot of gyms, NBA arenas and games. Nobody does it better than BYU. So congrats to them on Jimmer and having a great day and giving him the respect and honor that he deserved.
First-class organization, no doubt about it, and it was a grand celebration, albeit a little bit tainted because of what happened to Richie, and Jimmer felt it. But Jimmer is a guy who is very solution-oriented, as is BYU's head coach, Kevin Young. And so now the task at hand is, okay, well, how do we band together and find guys that can produce and compensate for the loss of Richie, statistically speaking? I just referenced Jimmer's story from 2011 when he went to Dave Rose and said, I'll handle Brandon's points if you can find guys to get Brandon's rebounds. Well, Richie was averaging roughly 18 points a game this season and about 6 rebounds. So what combo of players do you see being able to compensate for the stats that Richie leaves behind?
Well, part of the problem with Richie is he did so many things well.
Yes.
And it wasn't just about shooting. His rebounding was ferocious. His defensive intensity was consistent and relentless. His ability to score on the baseline around the rim was amazing. And, of course, he could shoot the ball. So he was the complete player, and it is hard to replace that. But I guess the initial thought is, well, you do what you did with Colorado, and you're going to need guys like Tyler Maruss and Alexei Kostic, like they did against Colorado, to step in and make 3 or 4 three-pointers a game, because Richie's a 3 or 4 three-pointer a game guy. You're going to have to find guys that can really step up their rebounding and defensive, whether it's Hadeem or, you know, I think Alexei Kostic is a sneaky good defender and is strong. And I remember watching Tyler Maruss at Idaho last year. He was a real bulldog and got after it. And those guys, Mihailo, all those guys need to be better. This is an opportunity. As sad as it is, it's an opportunity for them. And I thought they did a pretty good job against Colorado. They'll need to be better, though. And like you've talked about, really, though, it's AJ and Rob. Can they be better? They've been pretty good. Hard to imagine them being better, but I think they have it in them. It's going to be taxing and grueling. They're going to have to play even more minutes. Defenses are going to be able to focus even more resources on stopping them. But I do think, you know, these guys aren't just some scrubs off the street. These are high-level recruits that have been brought to BYU because they've had success, they've had experience in Europe or wherever, even in high school nowadays, to be ready to play at this level. They don't give money and scholarships or whatever now to the guys that aren't really good players. And up to this point, you know, they haven't performed consistently, at least, and they haven't really performed, I think, to the best of their ability. But they have it in them. They have a skill set. And part of the issue is when you're only getting a minute or two here or there and you don't know when you're going to play, and if you make a mistake, you're going to get pulled. I mean, that's hard for anybody to get in any kind of real groove and confidence. But now those guys will get the minutes, and they'll have opportunities to get better and get comfortable and get confident. And I think we'll see the true player that they are start to shine. Now, can that equal Richie? Probably not. But at this point, you're just trying to be the best that you can. And I still think, although my expectations by definition without Richie have been lowered, I still have high expectations. And I believe in these guys and think they can do great things. So it's not a time to cry or whine or give up. It's a time to find a way to get better. Every player needs to get every from AJ to Jared McGregor. Every player needs to get better and help this team and just try and come together. And you're not going to replace Richie, but you want to be as good a team as you can be without him.
This week, obviously, I mean, it's a beast. You've got 2 top 6 teams. You know, luckily, over the final 6, you've got 3 at home, 3 on the road. What do you believe is a good record for this team, or a realistic record over the final six games before Kansas City?
Yeah, well, listen, I'm getting used to winning down in Arizona, so I'm, you know, that would be amazing. I don't expect that. I'd like to see the team compete at a high level against those guys. I think that's realistic. But then you go, you've got two top 10 teams in Iowa State and Houston. Excuse me, Iowa State coming in, sorry. And listen, I always think BYU has a reasonable, rational chance of winning against anybody in the Marriott Center. So you've got them and Texas Tech, you know, top 10, 15 teams on your home floor. So that's a great opportunity. And if you can find a way to win those games, you're looking really good. And UCF, I think, is certainly winnable at home. The ones that concern me is that road trip to Wake Forest, or excuse me, Wake Forest, West Virginia and Cincinnati. You know, those are games that BYU, I would have thought, should win. Now it's questionable. They're going to have to really play well. And West Virginia is the team you're kind of battling for conference seating, tournament seating and stuff. So that's kind of the question mark. How will this team do on the road against kind of the middle of the pack Big 12 teams?
Yeah.
And so we'll see. But anyway, you know, that's a long-winded answer to your question. But I think if they were to go 500 in the rest of the games, I think that would be a nice accomplishment, and maybe win a game or two in the tournament. And then hopefully you're able to find some magic in the NCAA tournament, win a couple.
Mark, always great to talk to you, my friend. You're the best of the best, and we appreciate how real you are on the Richie situation, because I think a lot of BYU fans can relate to that. It is difficult to handle on a personal basis, because he's just salt of the earth human. So your words have a healing effect for us, and we appreciate your optimism as always.
Well, I love Richie and his family. I love you guys, and all I want to do is go camel riding with Jason and then have a chicken salad at Texas Roadhouse. That's my dream.
Your dream? That's my dream.
We got to talk about dreams, guys.
Then we can ride off into the sunset together.
Beautiful.
Mark, great to have you on the show, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man.
See you guys.
The fabulous Mark Durant on BYU Sports News.
All right, number 23, BYU men's basketball looking to pick up a resume-boosting victory tomorrow night in Tucson against number 4, Arizona. Pregame coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern time on BYU Radio.
Still on the way. More top 25 talk regarding BYU men's basketball and more weekly awards for A.J. DeBonta and Rob Wright III. Plus, a massive stretch ahead for BYU women's hoops if they want to get into the NCAA tournament. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jason Shepherd. Let's get to today's headline, sponsored by BYU Continuing Education, inspiring lifelong learning for Cougar fans everywhere.
BYU basketball drops a spot to number 23 in the latest AP poll after going 2-0 last week on the road at Baylor and then home against Colorado. Cougars right now listed as a 6th seed in Joe Lunardi's latest bracketology. BYU will look to pick up a big win in Tucson versus number 4 Arizona tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, as well as BYU Radio.
Anise Junior DeBonta and Rob Wright III both received Big 12 Weekly Awards for their performances against Baylor and Colorado. AJ named the Big 12 Newcomer of the Week, 5th time in the last 8 weeks, by the way. And he's part of the starting five after averaging 28 points, 9 rebounds, 7.5 assists, and 2 steals per contest in last week's games. Wright also named to the Big 12 starting five, back-to-back 30-point performances, including a career-high 39 on Saturday. How about that? Averaging 34.5 points with 3.5 assists in those two games.
I'll take it. Big 12 scoreboard for you last night. What a game. If you didn't get a chance to watch it, boy, did you miss out on one. Number 6, Iowa State beat number 2, Houston in Ames, 70-67. Cyclones set a program record for the fewest turnovers in a game with only 3.
Against Houston?
Against Houston. Iowa State comes to Provo on Saturday. And then tonight, Number 13, Texas Tech is in Tempe to take on Arizona State. TCU heads to Orlando to face UCF. And Kansas State hosts Baylor in the Wildcats' first game without Jerome Tang as head coach.
BYU women's basketball hosting Cincinnati tonight in the Marriott Center. The Cougars trying to make a stretch run to get an NCAA tournament bid. BYU 17-9 on the season. They're 6-8 in a tough Big 12 slate. Four games to go. Coverage starts 9 Eastern on ESPN Plus and BYU Radio. They might have to win out to get that NCAA tournament bid.
BYU baseball won the series finale, beating Western Kentucky 12-8 yesterday to even that opening series at 2 games apiece. Batcats were led by Ezra McNaughton, who hit 2 home runs and drove in 5. The Cougars will continue on the road later this week on Thursday, playing at the Tony Gwynn Legacy Tournament in San Diego.
BYU men's volleyball holding steady at number 7 in the new ABCA rankings after sweeping Menlo College twice over the weekend. BYU now 11-2 on their season and 2-0 to start conference play.
And Riley Chamberlain was named the USTF CCCA Women's Athlete of the Week after breaking the NCAA record in the mile, running a 4:20.61. Chamberlain beat the previous record by nearly 3 seconds and beat her previous school record by over 5 seconds.
It's like a mile sprint, if you think about it. Incredible. Speaking of Riley Chamberlain, she's going to join us next along with teammate Jane Hedengren to recap that unforgettable NCAA record-breaking performance over the weekend. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by BYU Continuing Education, inspiring lifelong learning for Cougar fans everywhere.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B, and now it's time to deliver on the promise we left with you going to break. That is to bring in some NCAA record holders once again into the Cougar Council room. They are Riley Chamberlain and Jane Hedengren of BYU Track and Field. Welcome to both of you after an unforgettable weekend.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Okay, so a thought just crossed my mind as we were coming back from break and seeing your jerseys with the BYU and you're most recently at Boston. It feels like there's this trend that has developed where when BYU shows up, if I'm running against you, I'm thinking, oh boy. BYU's here. What's the vibe you get from opponents when they line up to race against you and you're repping BYU because of what you bring in, Riley?
I don't know. Honestly, I just feel proud every time to put on the BYU jersey, like representing the school, representing like our religion and just everybody else that's behind us. There's so many people. So I feel proud every time I get to put the jersey on.
Same question for you, Jane. What when people look and see BYU, do you feel like they know that you're there to compete?
Yeah, definitely echoing Riley's thoughts. Like, it's just a privilege every single time. And I feel like, yeah, there's respect there, like, between our competitors and also respecting where they're coming from and what they're representing. But definitely proud to be representing BYU.
Well-earned respect.
Yeah, well, my goodness. 100%. The other part about it, and it's interesting that Spencer brought up, you know, looking at the jerseys and whatnot, is that those pictures were coming up on the screen. I looked at both of you, and both of you were kind of glued to it, and you had just these big smiles on your faces. And I assume that certainly because of how things ended, but it's also the camaraderie as teammates to be able to share those experiences. What are those experiences like for both of you?
Definitely just so special. I think it's always fun to look back at different moments because they hold such a special place in my heart. And who I get to do this with, who I get to do with Riley, with teammates, with others. And it just means a lot every single time.
Definitely. And like just getting to watch each other put the work in like day in and day out and then watching it pay off. It's just so incredibly special. And like, I don't know, both of us worked very well together during that race. And
clearly,
so like to be able to have it come together for both of us was just so fun.
Okay, let's paint the picture for those that aren't aware. In case you missed the first go around, Riley, you run a 4:20 mile, which is blistering.
Well, thank you.
You set the NCAA record. Jane, you would have broken the record too. at the NCAA level if it weren't for Riley. Both of you broke the previous standing record. When did you hear and realize, oh my gosh, we both just broke the old record?
Right afterwards. I feel like, at least for me personally, when I come through the line, I'm still like in race mode. And it, so it takes me like a second to like process what just happened. And then Jane like grabbed me and she's like, we did it.
Do you go into these races with a goal of breaking the record, or do you go in to run your best? And then if something like that happens, then it happens. What's the mentality in that?
Yeah, I think tentatively we have kind of a range we're shooting for time-wise, especially when there are those pacers that we get the opportunity to have. But I think ultimately we're just out there to give it our very best effort. And tactically, we want to focus on the best plan to execute that and just work well out there together.
But. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, there are professional runners also running in that race, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so this, it's a unique dynamic in track and field because that sometimes happens. But what did that do for you to have pros running against you? Do you feel like it makes you faster?
Definitely. I feel like it sets a standard that, like, I don't know, like they're trying to go even faster than you're trying to go. And so it's like, okay, well, like if they can do that, like I can do this. And eventually, like I'll be to where they're at, hopefully. And so, yeah, just... I don't know. It's just so fun watching, even in the NCAA this weekend, like so many women ran so fast in the mile. So it's just like, if she can do it, why can't I? So
you obviously have to have a lot of confidence to be able to do what you do. And certainly with the results that we see, we know you guys are confident. But what type of confidence does that give you? Not just breaking the records, but as Spencer said, doing this, knowing that there are some professionals involved in this as well. What kind of confidence builder is something like that?
Yeah, I think just echoing what Riley had mentioned, it's just incredibly inspiring to kind of see those markers of like what we're trying to work towards and just take confidence and a little bit of pride in the way in which we're doing it too. Like we are chasing these goals relentlessly, but also with a lot of joy and caring about those around us as we are going through that process. And so it just feels very rewarding and just lots to look forward to.
It's obviously so taxing to run that pace in the mile. Grueling race. Grueling. That's the best word I can think of. The 800, I feel about similar, right? But at what point did you feel like, this is a good race for me, Riley? Or can you even feel it? Because you're trying to trim, at times, hundredths off of a second. So when did you maybe feel like, this is going well for me?
I feel like, 800 in, I was like, oh, this kind of hurts a little bit. We're only halfway through. And like Ellie, one of the pros, was like way up in front. And I was kind of feeling like I was on my own. And then Jane just moves around me. And I'm like, okay, like she believes. So I'm going to stick on her. And so like, I feel like around 1200 in is where I was like, okay, I think this could come together nicely.
Jane, were you feeling the same pain that Riley was after 800, or how was your race?
Definitely. I feel like I was just trying to keep that momentum going because there were some competitors in front of us, and I just wanted to keep my eyes on them and then track them down as best we could. And so I know Riley has an amazing close, and so I was just hoping going around Riley at that point that we could help each other push through those middle laps and then hopefully just see how it played out in the end.
Because BYU, all the Cougars do is, you know, break records. Is there a specific record that you guys have your eyes on next?
Oh, gosh.
You've broken so many already.
It's like, what's another one?
I feel like now we're into championship season, and so that kind of racing, you're just racing for titles now. And so I feel like times kind of take a little bit more of a backseat, whereas, like, you need a time to get into NCAAs, and so everybody's chasing the next fastest time to be able to get in. But now it's like, okay, like most likely, like going into conference and nationals, like you're in, everybody's done their like fast racing, and so now it's time to just compete for titles and everything else. So
how does that change that mental sort of shift and a refocus, how does that change as the season goes on for both of you?
I think, yeah, as it starts out, at least in indoor, you're trying to gun for the fastest times possible and like just see where your fitness is at and really enjoying that process. And then Like Riley mentioned, it kind of shifts towards more of this competitive standpoint where more tactics can be involved, and you just really get to enjoy the art of racing.
You've both done this so much. So how are your nerves before a race like the one you had in Boston?
I feel like the nerves are always there, but you can let it like be like scary nerves or excited nerves. And so we try to channel excitement versus scary. And also it's just like such a blessing to get to do this. Like we trained so hard and so long for it. So like might as well enjoy the payoff.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a delicate balance, and we love racing, and so it's just a great opportunity every time. And nerves are seen as a positive thing, at least in my perspective. It's just your body getting ready to go.
It brings me comfort that even you, pros, right, you still get nervous. That makes me feel better.
Definitely. Give everybody an idea of what the next couple of weeks looks like for you guys as you continue to train and get ready for the Big 12 Championships, Nationals, things like that. What do the next couple of weeks look like for you guys?
I feel like for this week, we have just a pretty big training block, and then next week we'll kind of wind down or wind up for a conference, and then we're both gonna try some different events possibly. We'll see what coach puts us in, what we can compete best in, and then another big training block in the NCAAs. It goes pretty quick.
What does coach yell at you like because you both said like we can hear her, like yeah. We know her voice, you train, but what is she yelling at you like in the middle of a race?
I feel like it gets more and more dramatic as the race goes on. It starts off, if you go out too fast, she won't tell you your time. She'll be like, you're good. And then like you get towards the middle, she's like, keep it rolling. And then towards the end, it's just like, she's like in your face as you're coming around the corner. That's so fun.
Oh, that is fantastic insight. We saved the best for last, Jason. That's great. We love Coach Taylor. And we appreciate all that you do to represent BYU. Congratulations on an incredible record-setting performance.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Jason, should we continue?
Let's go on. What's a fair record to expect for BYU basketball in the final six games? We'll read more responses to our question of the day coming up after the break. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by PAX, healthcare careers built for victory.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Station. We are live in Studio B.
What are we doing here?
And we have discovered, thanks to our friend at Ben Bags, Ben Bagley, one of our producers here at BYU TV, incredible photos of Jason Shepherd.
I didn't even know he was there.
And apparently I'm involved in this too. Ben says, hey, Spencer Linton, I just happened to have photo proof of Jason Shepherd riding a camel. Is that in Arizona? Oh, wait.
Oh, look at what?
Jason.
Why are you driving?
AI for the win.
Oh, I had not seen that one yet. That is great. By the way, how awesome was it that we were able, that we had the BYU outfits with us, though?
The sash.
It's very impressive.
It could be in Arizona, right?
Heck yeah.
They're rolling dunes out there like that in Arizona somewhere. There has to be,
by the way, I retweeted Ben's original tweet and said, what a majestic animal. I would like to clarify, I am talking about the camel. So
I'm glad you clarified it. Question of the day. What's a fair record to expect for BYU basketball in the final six games? Oh, these images.
Our
elite voice of the day, presented by PAX, healthcare careers built for victory. Coming in from at Bashford Mikey says 3-3. This week will be tough adjusting to no Richie, but the Cougs will bounce back after two top 10 losses. Ooh. So Bashford Mikey calling for two tough losses this week, but then going 3-1 in the back four.
Okay. I think there are a lot of people that feel that way. Yeah, I can certainly understand that.
It'd be nice to get ahead of the game and shock somebody.
Absolutely. Go, you win one or both of these,
just give me one.
You're in business.
Oh man. today's Rising Shoutouts presented by Mountain America, official credit union of BYU Athletics.
All right, good luck to BYU women's basketball tonight. Four regular season games left. There is still everything in front of this team.
Come on.
They got a big one tonight against Cincinnati. Good luck to them.
You have to win at least three of the final four to be in the conversation for the bubble. Like, they can do it.
They can do it.
Our thanks to today's guests, Mark Durant, Riley Chamberlain, and Jane Hedengren.
Conversation continues 24-7 on X, Instagram, and Facebook. All of our shows are on demand. All you need to do is go to BYUSN.com.
For Jason Shepherd, I'm Spencer Linton. Shout out to Ambrosia Anderson. We'll see you tonight for BYU Women's Hoops on ESPN+. Go Cougs!
Giddy up, y'all!